got out some eggs and started making breakfast. Like nothing had happened. Like she hadn't just turned me into bear food. And I thought, I gave up my mission for you. Mom had always been the one real person I felt like I could trust. Even after Bear moved in with us, I figured she'd still be on my side when it really counted. Now I didn't know what to think anymore except, get me out of here! Chapter 45. First Day Back Blues. The first day back at school started with a bang. Or, I guess, with a shove. Miller literally nabbed me 2 seconds after I walked in the door. There were tons of people around, and I didn't even know he was there until I felt that familiar hand clamping onto the back of my neck.
Guess what, Catchadorian? I actually read some of your stupid little notebook on vacation, he said, right in my ear. All I can say is, wow, you're even more pathetic than I thought.
Get off of me! I tried to pull away, but he just held on tighter. I could practically feel his greasy thumb poking into my brainstem.
So here's the deal, Miller said. New year, new price. It's $1.50 a page from now on. And if you're lucky, I won't show your girlfriend, Jeannie Galetta, how you like to draw little pictures of her all the time. Got it?
He didn't wait for an answer, though. He just pushed me straight down, hard enough for a full face plant in front of everyone.
Watch your step, Picasso, he said.
Gabe Wisnicki gave him a high five for that one, and they both walked right over my stuff and up the hall. Ever since Miller had gotten my notebook and started taking my money, he wasn't so interested in actually killing me anymore. It was more like he was just testing me now to see how much I'd take. And I guess the answer was, not too much. I didn't stop to think. I didn't use my words. I just got up and ran straight at Miller. My feet left the floor. I landed on his back, and I held on with everything I had. Miller tried to reach for me, but then he changed his mind. He turned halfway around instead and jumped backward, really hard, into the wall. If it was a wrestling move, you'd call it the dead meat sandwich. And guess who was the meat? I lost my grip, along with all the air in my lungs, and hit the floor again, without Miller ever putting a hand on me. A bunch of people gathered around. Some of them started yelling, "Fight! Fight! Fight!" And Mrs. Stricker was out of the front office, like somebody had shot her out of a cannon.
"What's going on here?" she yelled.
"Rafe jump Miller!" Gabe said.
The problem was, it was true. There were about 3 dozen witnesses.
"Miller pushed me down," I said.
"You tripped," Miller said,
and pointed at the mats by the front door. They're all old and warpy, and people trip on them all the time.
"Liar!
Wimp!
Both of you,"
Stricker said, laser tagging us with her eyes.
"Into the office! Pronto!"
"But I didn't do anything," Miller said, all wide-eyed and innocent.
Seriously, they should recruit him for drama club. At least Stricker wasn't buying it.
"Mr. Miller, you're one of the 2 biggest troublemakers I've got," she told him,
and then looked right at me so we'd all know who the other one was.
"Let's go. March!"
I didn't have much choice, so I marched, right out of Miller the Killer's hands, and into Sergeant Stricker's. Chapter 46. Doing Time with Sergeant Stricker. The cuffs dig into my wrists. My hands are numb. Sweat trickles down my forehead, and some blood, too, where the guards rough me up before they threw me into this hole. How long have I been here? An hour? 6 hours? A day? It's all a blur. Suddenly, a bright light shines in my face. It's so strong, I can't see anything else. The heat is intense. A door opens somewhere. I can't see anymore, but I hear footsteps and jangling keys. Then a voice.
You got something to prove, prisoner 2041588?
I'd know that voice anywhere. It belongs to Sergeant Ida P. Stricker, the biggest, baddest, meanest guard in this whole joint. And the P stands for pain.
No, ma'am, I say. Nothing to prove.
If you forget to say ma'am, she takes out one of your fingernails or toenails the hard way, with a pair of pliers. Believe me, it's not a mistake you make more than once.
Word on the cell block is that you jumped Miller the Killer for no reason, she says.
That's 'cause you got only half the story, I say. They left out the part about Miller starting it, ma'am.
So you're a liar and a fighter. Is that it?
No, ma'am. Miller's just out to get me. That's all. As far as I know, they've already let Miller go. This place isn't exactly the world capital of justice. Sergeant Stricker leans in close. I can see her face now, and the long, jagged scar down her cheek. They say she used to do cage fighting before she worked here.
Listen up, kid. I'm on your side, she says, like I'm supposed to believe that. I just want you to live up to your potential, that's all.
My potential, ma'am? I say.
That's right. Your potential to be the youngest little hoodlum I ever sent up to the federal penitentiary.
She laughs in my face, but there's no smile to go with it.
You think this place is hard, 2041588? You ain't seen nothing yet.
I think that's supposed to scare me, but it doesn't. What scares me are the brass knuckles she's unclipping from her utility belt. The one she's sliding over her tattooed fingers right now.
We're done talking, she says. Time for you to go to sleep. Say night-night, 2041588.
Then she slugs me once, twice, three times, before the room starts to spin, and everything goes black. Chapter 47. Down the Drain. Once Mrs. Stricker finished lecturing me about bad choices and wrong paths and good manners, she left me there in the box. That's what we call the homework room at school. It's this tiny little room with no windows, except in the door, so they can keep an eye on you when you're taking a makeup test or if you're in big trouble, like I was. After a while, one of the secretaries came in and told me they were ready for me in Mrs. Stricker's office. They? I said. But she just motioned at the door, like I should stop taking up so much of her day and start moving. By the time I got to the office, I'd figured it out for myself. Not that it mattered anymore. It was too late to do anything about it now. The stealth mom had already hit. Sit down, Rafe, Mom said. We have to talk. Blam! The next 45 minutes in that office was about as much fun as a day at Disney World, when it's pouring rain. And all there is to eat are hot dog buns, and you get electrocuted on the rides. Mom and Mrs. Stricker asked me a whole bunch of thinking questions, like, what were you thinking? And what do you think we should do now? Then they sent me back out so they could talk some more. Then they brought me in again. I was starting to feel like a human yo-yo. Rafe, it's time for some specific next steps, Mrs. Stricker said. We take fighting very seriously here at Hills Village. Tomorrow, you'll have a one-day in-school suspension, and frankly, it's the least you deserve. I braced myself for what was coming next. As for your grades, Mom said, Mrs. Stricker thinks, and I agree, that some tutoring could be good for you. Ms. Donatello has already offered to work with you after school on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I told her you'll be there.
You'll also have a peer tutor, Mrs. Stricker said. Somebody your own age to help you out with math and science once a week. We have an excellent program here at school, and I know just the student for the job.
Oh, no. Please, not that. She looked at her watch, and then leaned over her phone and pushed a button.
Mrs. Harper, could you please ask Jeannie Galetta to come down to the office?
I felt like my life was being sucked down the drain. Chapter 48. You Tell Me. Mom and Bear got into a big fight that afternoon when she told him what had happened. He kept yelling about how she wasn't hard enough on me, and she kept telling him to back off. I just stayed in my room, wishing for it to be over. Finally, Mom said something about how she was late for work, and she slammed the door on her way out. At least it was quiet now. At least that, I guess. When I asked Leo what he thought I should do about all this, he answered right away.
What is there to think about? He said. Dude, you are all out of reasons for staying out of the game, and we both know it.
It was true. I'd spent the last 2 months trying to be someone else, someone normal, maybe even someone good, and I wasn't any better off than before. Mom was mad at me. Bear was more in my face than ever, and the two of them were arguing about me all the time. Not only that, but Miller was still alive. Jeannie was about to be my tutor, and I was officially one of the worst kids in school. At least when I was playing Operation RAFE, I had some fun while I was being miserable. Miserable and fun? Or miserable and no fun? You tell me. I opened my backpack and dug in the bottom for my HVMS rulebook. I hadn't even looked at it in weeks. Where do I start? I said.
Anywhere, Leo said. Just pick something and go.
Easy for you to say, I told him. All you have to do is come up with the ideas and then sit back. I'm the one who has to do all the work.
How about this? He said. I'll give you 25,000 points for your fight with Miller.
That wasn't much of a real fight, I said. If it had been, I probably would have left school on a whole bunch of stretchers, one for each piece of me.
You got into trouble for fighting, so you get the points for fighting, Leo said. Plus another 75,000 for the suspension. Not bad, right? Now all you have to do is earn another 20,000 by the end of the day tomorrow, and you can consider yourself fully reactivated.
You mean the day after tomorrow, I said. I'm locked up in the box all day tomorrow.
Exactly,
Leo said.
That's your welcome back challenge.
I should have figured. It's always something with Leo.
How am I supposed to make 20,000 points sitting alone in a room? I said.
But Leo just sat back and pointed at the rulebook in my hand.
You tell me.
Chapter 49 Copycat. A little while later, I came out to the living room, where Bear was eating Fruity Pebbles out of the box, and watching some highlights from all the New Year's Bowl games he'd already seen.
I have to go to the store, I said.
There's some fish sticks in the freezer, he said.
It's not for dinner, I told him. I have to go to Office Mart. I need some poster board for a school project.
What kind of project?
He said, like I was lying, which I was, but he had no way of knowing that. I looked over at the TV, and the scores for all the different games were flashing by.
Statistics, I said. It's a math project.
I'd bet anything that if Bear hadn't just made himself the almighty ruler of my homework, he would have rolled over, farted, and told me this was my problem. But instead, he got up and yelled for Georgia to put on her coat, because we had to go to the store.
There are fish sticks in the freezer, she yelled back.
15 minutes later, we all pulled into the parking lot outside Office Mart. I told them I'd go get my poster board and be right back.
I want to come,
Georgia said.
Just wait here, I told her. Bear's missing his game highlights, and the faster I go, the faster we can get home again.
Just park it, Georgia,
Bear said. Seriously, I was getting pretty good at this stuff. I ran in and went straight over to the self-service copiers. Before anyone could tell me not to, I lifted up the lid on one of the machines, put my face down on the glass, and pushed the button. The first copy came out with my nose all mashed flat, but I got it right on the second try, which was a good thing, because the manager told me to stop copying my face, even though I was paying for it. It was 80 cents for the two color copies, plus another $2.29 for the poster board that I didn't really need. That meant two more pages I couldn't buy off of Miller. But I'd make it back once I started selling Zoom again.
Took you long enough,
Bear said when I came back to the car. I kept the photocopies pressed flat against the back of the poster board, where he couldn't see them, and got in.
All set for tomorrow, he said.
Guess I'll find out tomorrow, I said, which was absolutely true. Chapter 50 It was worth a shot, anyway. It's a documented fact that in-school suspension is the most insanely boring thing that could happen to a person at Hills Village Middle School. It's just you, your homework, and the homework room. All day long. I turned 13 in that room. Winter ended, and then spring came and went. Wars happened. Trees grew. Babies were born. And people died. I now completely understand why the school gives suspensions, because by the time you get out of there, you never want to spend another whole day in that little room again. I knew I didn't. But I did earn my 20,000 points by breaking Section 5, Rule 9. Sleeping in class or during school-sanctioned activities is prohibited. Okay, truthfully, I didn't expect for one second that my whole mask idea was actually going to work, and it didn't. But it was all I could come up with on short notice. And then once I thought of it, I started getting all curious and wanted to give it a try anyway. Mom says every masterpiece comes at the end of a long line of failures. Maybe someday I'll get this one right and sell a zillion of them. Meanwhile, I barely got to close my eyes before I heard the homework room door open and Mrs. Stricker start yelling at me.
"Rafe Catradorian, what in heaven's name is that supposed to be? Take it off immediately!"
I did, but when I handed it over to her, something totally unexpected happened. She looked down at the mask. It was just a piece of paper with a string, really. And her face started getting all weird. Her eyes squinched up. Her cheeks got kind of twitchy. At first, I thought something was wrong. But then she just burst out laughing. It didn't last long, maybe 2 or 3 seconds, before she got control of herself. Then she cleared her throat once, told me to get back to work, and left the room, shaking her head. Now, I don't know if you can appreciate this without actually knowing her, but getting Mrs. Stricker to laugh is like getting an octopus to stand up on 2 legs and maybe juggle with the other 6. As far as I know, nobody's ever seen it happen in the history of HVMS. That's why Leo gave me the 20,000 points anyway. And that's the story of how I survived my first in-school suspension. Chapter 51. 2 to Tutor. That next Wednesday at lunch was supposed to be my first tutoring session with Jeannie. I spent all of Mr. Rourke's 4th period social studies trying to make myself throw up or pass out just by thinking about it, but all I got was dizzy. After the bell, I went to my locker, even though I already had my math book. Then I went to the bathroom, even though I didn't have to go. Then I went and got lunch, even though I wasn't hungry. And then I slowly walked toward the math room. I'd already asked Mrs. Stricker for a different tutor, but basically, unless Jeannie was a convicted serial killer, or at least had head lice, I was stuck with her. When I got to the math room door, my feet just kind of kept going straight up the hall, like they knew better. Maybe I'd circle back around and try again, I thought. Or maybe, not even that. "Rafe?" I looked back, and Jeannie was leaning out into the hall. "Are you about to blow me off?" she said. She sure does cut to the chase, I'll tell you that much. "No, I just wanted to get something out of my locker," I said. "Uh-huh," she said, but it sounded a lot like, "Sure you did."
"Listen, Rafe, it's just tutoring. I can take it if you can."
"I can take it if you can? How was I supposed to back out now?" "Sure," I told her. "No problem." I followed her inside, and we sat down at one of the work tables. Jeannie already had her math book out.
"You're on Unit 8, right?" she said.
"I guess so," I said.
"Dividing fractions. That's a hard one."
I knew she was just trying to be nice. She'd probably finished Unit 8 when she was 8, and here I was, still trying to get through it. She took out a pencil and started pointing at a bunch of fractions on the page.
"So, you see these top numbers?" she said. "That's called the numerator. And then these bottom ones are..."
I didn't even know I was about to say something. "I'll give you $5 if we can skip this and pretend like we didn't," I told her. It just kind of popped out. Jeannie raised one eyebrow. I wasn't sure what that meant. She kept looking at me for a long time until I started to wonder if it was a staring contest or something. Then she said,
"Just so you know, Rafe, I never thought you were my project or whatever. I was just trying to be nice."
Whoa. I was surprised she even remembered I'd said that. The whole Thanksgiving bake sale disaster seemed like ancient history by now. And we'd never talked about it at all.
which was kind of awkward. But you know what was even more awkward? Talking about it. Besides, I was done with letting Jeannie see me as a loser. In fact, I was starting to feel done with a lot of things these days.
I didn't think you really thought that, I said, even though I really did.
It's no big deal. Jeannie just kept looking at me, so I opened my backpack and took out my math book, some paper, and a pencil.
Go ahead, I said. What do you call those top numbers again?
She picked up her pencil, too. Are you sure you want to do this? She said.
Sure, I said.
I can take it if you can. Chapter 52 Play by Play.
Welcome back, Operation RAFV fans. This game is coming to you live from HBMS, where we're in the third quarter of action, and the score is Rafe Katchadorian, 910,000, and
Hills Village, 0!
Katchadorian's been showing some fine form this quarter. A lot of people might have thought he was out for good after that stumble in the first half. But he's come back strong. We've been watching some world-class play ever since. Let's go to the highlights.
No disruption to the teaching process will be tolerated. 15,000 points. Students will respect the computer use policy. No exceptions. 20,000 points. Remember, folks, it's not just getting it done in this game. It's how you do it. Rafe's coach, Leo the Silent, has insisted on nothing but technique, technique, technique. And Katchadorian has risen to the occasion. He's not just back, ladies and gentlemen. He's better than ever!
He placed a frog that was supposed to be dissected later that day in with the trays full of lunch food. 30,000 points! He cut the lunch line for an additional 15,000 points. Of course, the question on everyone's mind is whether Katchadorian can break every last rule in the book and advance to the final round before the year is over. According to our latest RAFE net poll, 72% of you out there think he's going to pull this one out in the end. I'll tell you this much, ladies and gentlemen, judging by the quality of his third quarter play, it looks like he just might do it. He snuck into the teacher's lounge for 30,000 points, took bites out of their donuts for 3,000 points, and got 5,000 bonus points for misspelling words on their blackboard. We've been hearing a lot of talk from Katchadorian about some kind of huge finish coming up at the end of this game, whether that's just the usual trash talk or whether there's some real action to back it up. We'll have to wait and find out. One thing's for sure, though. Rafe's biggest obstacles are still ahead of him. Will he crash and burn, or will he go out in a blaze of glory? All we can tell you right now, ladies and gentlemen, is that we're going to keep with this story until it's over, one way or another. So stay tuned. Chapter 53 Tuesdays and Thursdays. I'm not sure what the difference was supposed to be between tutoring with Donatello and detention with Donatello, but it felt a whole lot to me like I'd gotten a bunch of detentions just for being dumb. Most of the time, we did regular classwork, like diagramming sentences, yawn, or research for my social studies report on copper mining, yawn. But one Tuesday after school, I came in and she had a bunch of big sketch pads and pencils and markers out on the table.
What's all this? I asked.
I thought you could use a little break, she said. We're just going to sketch today.
Then she picked up a pad for herself, and I realized she really meant we.
You look surprised, she said. I love sketching.
You can make anything out of absolutely nothing. What's better than that?
I didn't know what she was up to with all this, but I went ahead and took a pad anyway. For the next hour, we just sat there and drew. I kept expecting her to start asking me questions or to give me some kind of assignment, but she never did. When the bell rang for late bus, she just asked to see what I'd done. It was definitely the best, not quite a detention, I'd ever had.
"You've got a wonderful imagination," Donatello said, looking at my stuff. "It's all right there on the page."
For a second, it made me want to tell her about Leo. Most of what was on the page felt like it came from him. But Donatello probably thought I was messed up enough as it was. She didn't need to hear about me getting ideas from someone who wasn't even there. When she was done looking, I started to tear out my pages, but she told me to keep the whole pad.
"Put it to good use, okay?" she said. "Nice job today, Rafe. Excellent, in fact."
I wasn't sure whether I should take the pad or not. It felt like some kind of test, and I didn't know what the right answer was. "But we didn't do anything today," I said. Donatello just shrugged.
"I guess that depends on how you look at it."
I had to go. The late bus driver was always super strict about leaving on time, and I didn't want to walk home. So I went ahead and took the sketch pad. I still wasn't sure if that's what I was supposed to do or not. But Donatello wasn't telling. Chapter 54. Special Assignment. Operation RAFE Score Sheet. Rules broken, 86. Rules to go, 26. Points, 910,000. Lives remaining, 1. I was getting close. Close to the end of the rulebook. Close to getting all my pages back from Miller. And at least kind of close to the end of the year. The weather was warming up, and pretty soon it was going to be time to start thinking about that final project. But first, there was one other thing I wanted to do. This wasn't for points, or for Leo. It was just for me. And it was going to take all my skills to pull it off. Everything I'd used in the game so far. Art, stealth, and bravery. The big three. I'd already put together my materials, $6 for 100 black and white copies at Office Mart, and brought them to school that morning. Now, here I was, sitting through first period Spanish, ready to make my next move. In Señor Wasserman's class, you can almost always get a bathroom pass, as long as you ask for it in Spanish. So I'd practiced the night before. "Señor Wasserman, me permite ir al baño?" I said.
"Sí, Rafael," he told me.
The tricky part wasn't getting the pass. It was getting those copies I'd brought to school out of the room without anyone seeing. And that's why I already had a stack of them shoved down the back of my boxers. It didn't matter if the paper got wrinkled. In fact, I kind of like how it worked out. Seeing as how this whole plan was all about getting back at the biggest butt face in the entire school. Picture 67 shows the hilarious flyers I made of Miller, looking like a chicken laying an egg. I wrote, "It's Miller the Killer Chicken," on them. Chapter 55.
Is it still bullying if you're bullying the bully?
By lunchtime, I'd gotten 4 different hall passes and hit up most of the boys' bathrooms, 2 of the girls' bathrooms, the back of the library, and a bunch of the second-floor lockers, all without being caught. Not only had everyone seen my flyers by now, but they were all talking about them, too. It wasn't like I expected people to actually buy this idea that Miller was any kind of chicken, killer, or otherwise. Still, I had a feeling the nickname was going to stick for a while.
That took care of the offense part of my plan.
Now it was time to switch to defense. I hadn't laid eyes on Miller since homeroom, but it didn't take a genius to know I'd be at the top of his suspect list. In fact, he was probably looking for me right then, so I went looking for him. He and his friends almost always hung out in the hall outside the gym at lunch, and sure enough, there they were. My heart was pounding big time as I walked up to them. Ricky Pena saw me first and elbowed Miller. When Miller turned around, I could see one of my flyers crumpled up in his hand, not to mention the murder in his eyes. He came right for me.
"I didn't do it," I said.
He grabbed me by the shirt anyway, but I kept talking.
"I just want to, you know, I've got $15, I told him.
This was the weird part with me and Miller. We both hated each other, but even more than that, he wanted my money, and I wanted my notebook back. Neither of us had said anything about it to Stricker. Even when we both got suspended, it was like middle school mafia or something. Miller looked at me for a long time, like he was trying to decide what to do with me. Then he let go of my shirt.
"All right," he said. "Third floor bathroom. 5 minutes.
5 minutes, I said, and walked away. But my heart was still going just as fast as before. This was only half over. Was it 5 minutes until I pulled this off? Or 5 minutes to live? Chapter 56. 10 pages and a lie.
"Don't go in that bathroom!"
Is that what you're thinking right now? I know, I know. What kind of idiot would let himself get cornered like that? I guess the answer is a desperate one. I went straight up to the third floor and waited in the hall to make sure Miller came alone. When he got there, I followed him inside, and we both checked the stalls before either of us said anything. Then Miller turned on me and held out his hand.
"Money," he said.
As soon as I gave it to him, he grabbed me and twisted my arm around behind my back.
"You think I'm stupid?" he said.
He pulled that crumpled flyer out of his pocket and tried to shove it in my mouth.
"You are so dead for this."
"I told you, I didn't do it," I said, turning my head away. My arm hurt, but nothing was broken. Yet.
"Don't give me that. You draw all the time. It's all over that stupid little notebook of yours," he said.
"Did you look at my pictures?" I said. "They aren't anything like the other thing." It seemed like a bad idea to actually say Miller the Killer Chicken out loud right now.
"You could have faked it," Miller said.
He twisted my arm some more, and I tried not to yell out.
"You could have drawn different or whatever."
"Miller, seriously," I said. "I spent half the year trying to get my stuff back from you. Do you really think I'd blow it on something as stupid as this?" I was still more scared than anything, but I have to say, that was just about the most genius moment of my life. Not only did Miller buy it and finally let me go, but he gave me the 10 pages I'd paid for, too. Besides my arm, which hurt like crazy, I hadn't felt this good in a long time.
"How many more pages to go?"
I asked him. He'd stopped giving them back to me in order, and I was losing track.
"Just keep bringing the money, and you'll find out," he said. "I'll tell you this much, though. You figure out who made these."
He threw the flyer in the garbage and then kicked the garbage can over.
"And I'll give you 10 pages for free."
"That's a deal," I said, and got out of there while I still could. When I left that bathroom all in one piece, I decided Leo had to give me some major points for this after all. I'm not sure if I broke any rules that day, but it didn't even matter. I'd figured out that there's more than one way to fight a war. And believe me, that's worth a lot. Chapter 57. Into the Home Stretch. Then, on the last day of the third quarter, something amazing happened. I'd been selling Zoom out of my locker, slowly but surely, so I wouldn't get caught. And when I told Miller I was ready to buy some more pages, he admitted there were only 9 left.
"But the price just went up again," he said.
"You can have them for 20 bucks." I didn't even care. I had 27 in my pocket anyway, and as long as Miller didn't know that, it was almost like saving $7. Even better, my school year was now officially headed into the home stretch, and Miller's reign of terror was over. Okay, Miller's reign of terror was never over, but at least he couldn't hold that stupid notebook over my head anymore. I decided this was a good time to start thinking seriously about my big Operation RAFE final project. The rules were that I had to get all the way through the HVMS Code of Conduct before I could move on to the last round. But that didn't mean I couldn't start getting ready for it in the meantime. After school, I rode over to the Office Mart and picked out a big, heavy-duty black marker. I got the kind with the chisel tip that can make thick or thin lines with the same pen. It cost $4.99, which left me just enough to buy some flaming barbecue chips on the way home. Back in the garage, I took a roll of masking tape from Bear's workbench, a stack of old newspapers out of the recycling bin, and a can of Zoom to go with the chips. I brought it all back to my room and stuck a chair under the doorknob for maximum security, just in case. Next, I used the tape to put a triple layer of newspaper up on my wall so the marker wouldn't soak through when I pressed down. On top of that, I put a bunch of pages from the big sketchbook Ms. Donatello had given me, all edge to edge, so it was like a giant canvas. Now, I was ready to start practicing. Leo sat in and gave me ideas, the way he always does.
"Do it like this," he'd say, "and try that," and "put this over there," and "get rid of that."
It sounds kind of bossy when I say it out loud, but trust me, we make a good team. The more I practiced with that marker, the better I got. And the better I got, the faster I got, which was just as important. Speed was going to be key when it came time for the real thing. I was starting to get excited, too. As far as I was concerned, the end of Operation RAFE couldn't come fast enough. I could just see it now.
"Unforgettable," Principal Dwight. "Rafe Kachadorian is a criminal
and a genius."
Ida Stricker.
"He's a total catch."
Jeannie Galetta. Two thumbs up. Leo the Silent. Chapter 58. Rafe Kachadorian is a big fat idiot. And then I got my third quarter grades. It was like someone had taken all the D's and F's from my last report card and just rearranged them in different places on the new one. In other words, 2 months of extra tutoring, and all I'd learned was a new way to spell D-D-F-F-D-F. I knew Jeannie would be dying to know how we did, so I actually brought my report card with me to our next tutoring session.
"Don't take it personally," I told her. "You can't fix a car if it doesn't have an engine, right?"
I even knocked on my head like it was hollow, but Jeannie didn't laugh. She just sat there staring at my grades. I tried again. Hey, look on the bright side. One more quarter and we can kiss sixth grade goodbye forever.
Well, she finally said, I hope so.
You hope so? I didn't like the sound of that at all. What's that supposed to mean?
I mean, you must have thought about this, right? She said.
Thought about what?
Your grades, Rafe. You can't get report cards like this all year long and then expect to sail right into seventh. They could make you take extra classes. They could make you go to summer school. Or...
Jeannie bit her lip like she didn't want to say the next part.
Or they could make you do sixth grade all over again, she said,
just before my head exploded into a million billion pieces. Chapter 59. Chapter 60. Stalling for time.
I got up and walked straight out of the math room. There was no way I was going to cry about this.
Not in front of Jeannie. Not in school. Not at all.
Attention! Rafe Katchadorian does not cry. I repeat, Rafe Katchadorian does not cry!
But I went straight to the bathroom and locked myself in one of the stalls, just in case. How could this happen? I'd spent the whole school year thinking about how to survive sixth grade, and I forgot to think about the worst possible thing. It was like getting blindsided by an aircraft carrier. And what kind of idiot doesn't see an aircraft carrier coming? Answer. Me, in a boat, called the SS Stupid. Check out illustration number 71 if you want to see what this looks like. I thought seriously about walking right out of that school and not looking back. I mean, what was the point of finishing the year if I was just going to have to do it over again? But before I could make my move, somebody started knocking on the bathroom door. Rafe, are you in there? It was Jeannie. Unbelievable. I didn't answer, but the door opened anyway. I'm coming in, she said. And a second later, I could see her sneakers under the stall door. Rafe? Go away, I said. It's not the end of the world, you know. It's not even the end of the school year. There's still time, she said.
For what? A brain transplant?
For getting your grades up.
Easy for you to say, I told her.
You eat fractions for breakfast. She took a step closer, and I could see her eye through the crack of the door.
If I could have flushed myself right out of there, I would have done it.
You know what my dad would say right now? Jeannie asked.
Yeah. What are you doing in the boys' bathroom?
No, she said. He'd tell you to buck up.
Buck up, I said.
That's what he always says when he thinks I'm feeling sorry for myself. Don't give up. Buck up.
I got to my feet and opened the stall door. I'm not feeling sorry for myself, I said, which was at least a little pathetic, since I was standing next to a toilet.
Uh-huh, Jeannie said. Could we please finish this conversation somewhere else?
But then, knock, 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 knock. Somebody else was outside the bathroom door. This was starting to get downright weird.
Hello?
Said a familiar voice. The door swung open, and Mrs. Stricker was standing there, looking ready to kill.
Rafe Katchadorian and Jeannie Galetta!